This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's up, everybody? Monday edition of Money Moves coming at you live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel holding it down with you for the next 2 hours. We were on the air yesterday with Countdown to Kickoff and Live Bet Sunday for 4 hours, going through what we thought was going to be a very boring early window with all of the blowouts. And then we ended up having a little bit of the chaos. I feel like it's inevitable. We always get at least one that is a surprise ending.
You're referring to Jets Bengals?
Have to.
Yeah, Jets Bengals was good. I mean, as we mentioned, we were talking about this yesterday, for a game to not only in Survivor, you know, go the way that it did, but also for it to come down to a comeback which ends with 15 unanswered points and the cherry on top as a halfback pass into the corner of the end zone, a contested catch. Brilliant end. Yep. Made some Bengals fans unhappy here, but it was a brilliant end.
How was your weekend overall?
I feel like it's still going, to be quite honest with you. I don't know. I was here hanging out for a while yesterday. Shout out to Nish, a P1 listener who was up at Circa and Stadium Swim. So we were hanging out here for a while. And then I think I went home and slept for a little bit. And then I was right back up. And it's all kind of a blur.
Yeah.
How about you?
It was
even though I saw you yesterday.
Yeah, it was. Well, I had a beverage after the show yesterday, which is something I don't normally do, which did help for me to take my I always take a nap on Sundays because I just have to with the quick turnaround from the Saturday college football game to being over here on the air. But I slept much harder yesterday than I normally do.
I'll say two things. First off, a little peer pressure is good because I think I pressured you into having a beer afterward. Although you immediately went to the big beers, which was somewhat shocking.
If I'm only having one, I have to have the biggest one.
And I will say, I was gonna do this as part of a call me crazy, but I didn't think I was going to make it fit. So since you brought this up, I got to tell you, I didn't realize Stormy here was such a ride or die. Sticking up for me yesterday when some jabroni at the bar started coming at me because he was drunk and angry that I was rooting for the Jets against the Bengals. You wouldn't let it go. You were going hard. I appreciate it.
I didn't like how he was talking to you.
Immediately, he's a real one.
We were minding our own business, having our own conversation, and I did not like how he was. And you said, like, we are in our place of business,
right?
You know,
I was like, it's just not worth it. But very much so. I appreciate
it. Teammates, buddy. That said, that was just the tip of the iceberg for what was a wild weekend in sports. So let's set the table with everything we have today on the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
So we will talk through plenty of what happened in the NFL. It was another huge weekend for favorites. The dogs that won, as JVT mentioned, led to some survivor carnage. But the big news in the college football world as well, Brian Kelly out at LSU will break down the why and what's next at the Bayou as well.
Yeah, I mean, the coaching cycle or the coaching carousel in college football is going to be pretty crazy. And then if you add on to the fact that what we heard on Saturday, if it is to be believed from Deanna Rossini, that Steve Sarkisian maybe wants the Tennessee Titans job. We're talking about Texas, Florida, LSU, all opening with Penn State, all opening within the same cycle. There's not enough big names to go around, so one would assume that maybe some of these guys that are on the upswing are potentially going to land one of these big fish, but it is pretty crazy to see what this cycle is looking like right now.
Yeah, and I kind of feel bad for Florida a little bit for a second. They were like, okay, we're going to have the best opening so we can get our pick of who we want. Maybe not so fast anymore with LSU having that opportunity. We've also got plenty of takeaways and early angles looking ahead to Week 10 in college football and Week 9 in the NFL. It is World Series Game 3 night as well with the Dodgers and Blue Jays. Dodgers took Game 2 in Toronto. Another complete game performance from Yoshi Yamamoto. Tied this thing up at 1. We shift to LA today, and the Dodgers are getting bet up. More than $2 favorites now.
Yeah, I think it makes some sense. You know, we're part of our sports equinox because I think today is the day, right? We're going to have a sports equinox parlay. Ties into how I kind of think this is going to go. But Scherzer pitched very well last time out for the Toronto Blue Jays. I think there were some falsities within that performance against the Seattle Mariners, and I think that might be exposed here today against LA.
Okay. You mentioned the Sports Equinox Parlay, so that'll be World Series. We'll have an NBA pick, an NHL pick, and, of course, Monday Night Football. Chiefs and Commanders going head-to-head today. And as I put on the title card here, can the Chiefs cover double digits again because they are 7-0 outright, but 1-6 ATS when laying 7 or more points since last season. The lone cover was last week when they were laying double digits against the Las Vegas Raiders. We're at a 10.5, largely is the consensus number right now in favor of the Chiefs at home. Total 48. You can find anywhere from 47 to 48.5 in the market, however. And the big news associated with this one, why that number is as high as it is, No Jaden Daniels once again for the Washington Commanders. We will see Marcus Mariota, but at least he'll have some pass catchers. Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel expected to be back.
Yeah, I'm going to be really curious because my initial thought is to either wait for a cheaper number for Kansas City, but with this number where it's at, is to take it with Washington. You look at all these different metrics that Kansas City has defensively against the run, they're pretty below average run defense. I mean, across the board, we're talking mid-20s to low 20s, or high 20s, I guess, when you're looking at it from the perspective of ranking. They're just not good. And so when you have guys like, you know, Bill Kroski Merritt and the ability with this running game to scheme it up the way they have, like, there is a potential here that I think the Commanders can stay inside of this number, but you and I were talking about this. You know, I feel like somewhat gun-shy trying to go against these favorites. Yeah. I mean, this has been a theme now over the last 3 weeks, namely the last two in terms of an ATS perspective. These favorites have been coming in, and we're starting to see this gap widen between the best teams in the NFL and the worst teams in the NFL. It's not that the Washington Commanders are the worst team in the NFL, but, you know, they're, what, an average team, and especially on defense.
Well, and it's kind of tough, too, because – and I know we'll dive deeper into some of those – numbers when it comes to the favorites and where totals have been this season. But for people like us that work at our network, that you want to take dogs and yep. you want to be contrarian at times and go the other way from what the masses are doing. The public has been cashing in this season largely. And so you see a double digit number like this, you want to lean toward the dog. And in most cases, historically, that's been good. Some of the primetime numbers this season I did find a little bit interesting, though. Mm. Teams favored by 7 points or more in primetime this season, just 3-3 straight up, 1-5 against the spread. So primetime games have been a little bit different. Home favorites also in primetime, 11-7 straight up, 5-13 ATS since 2023, 3-13 ATS the last 16 instances.
I mean, so obviously that includes Thursday night, because I wonder if you were to remove the Thursday night short week, because I feel like mm-hmm. that adds some variance. What would that look like on a normal week? But either way, I mean, maybe there is something to that in terms of what we've seen here. I just, man, it's what do you do? You know, you painted the picture of the Chiefs in terms of what they've been ATS-wise, laying the touchdown or more. I can give you the favorites numbers over the last 2 weeks, sure. and we can go in that direction, sure. too. So there's so many different ways.
Conflicting stats all over the place.
Well, and then we could just go with the other thing, which is, look, man, this Chiefs offense looks different now that it's fully together. I mean, Rashee Rice looked explosive. They have all the weapons back. Mahomes is playing at an MVP level. Can you just trust that a defense themselves has its own issues? And when you look at them in terms of success rate for Washington, floating around that 20 mark as well, that this team is going to be able to get some stops here against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I just don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, and the Chiefs might not be flashy, but they have done the job. And, yep. you know, you think back to the 0-2 start and you're like, oh, goodness, is the regression finally coming after they played all these close games last year and they were on the winning end of so many of them? Are things going to change this season? Well, they have righted the ship here early. They were as long as 14-1 for the Super Bowl entering week 3. They're now the outright favorite. Patrick Mahomes is your MVP favorite at about +150 after his odds were as long as 25-1 entering week 4. And it seems like everything is kind of shifting in the Chiefs' direction all of a sudden. Yep. We even talked about the division numbers, although that division's getting pretty interesting now with the Broncos being able to creep out some wins in different ways. We talked about Dallas's defense, by the way. Did make Bo Nix look very good yesterday.
Did I see a Joe Milton touchdown pass yesterday in the back corner of the end zone or whatever it was? They got blown. They got smoked. No, I'm with you. Like, everything seems to be, to use your term, going in that direction. And it's tough for them because, you know, we would assume they're going to win this game because they are such heavy favorites. Mm-hmm. But when you get off to slow starts, now all of a sudden a game like next week against Buffalo looms large. If you can get this win here this weekend, then you've got a brutal opponent to go and take on the road next week. And all of a sudden, even if you win this game, you could be looking still at, like, what are we talking about, 5-4 for Kansas City, even though they might be starting to turn things around.
Any early thoughts on the total?
I mean, my initial thought is over. I think Washington, because here's the thing, Kansas City, you know, you would assume, like, hey, we're going to run the ball, maybe bleed out the clock. I think that's probably part of the strategy here for Washington. Weather's going to be fine, so you don't have to worry about anything like that. But in terms of Kansas City, open field yards per carry allowed, they're about 20th. Second level yards per carry allowed, they're 23rd. They can give up some explosive runs. So if you can generate some explosive plays on the ground against Kansas City, so they can get you to score, at least to get this total over, if that would be the case.
We are going to hit on this game numerous times throughout the course of the next 2 hours. We're going to have a deep dive from a prop betting perspective, and there are, at least I think, a handful of interesting opportunities in the Monday night game. But I did real quickly want to hit on a couple of the marquee injuries from the weekend, the biggest of which being New York Giants running back Cam Scataboo, who had a dislocated ankle. It looked really bad on the field. Him and your other RB1, Quinshon Judkins, who's been having such a great season. He left the game with the shoulder injury. Fortunately, though, for Cleveland, they do have a bye coming up.
They do, but the two rookies for Cleveland, right? They go down. Oh, yeah. Carson Swessinger. Swessinger? Carson Swessinger. He has a good game, has an interception, five tackles, and then ultimately goes down with an ankle sprain. Sounds like maybe 4 to 6 weeks. You mentioned Quinshon Judkins, so that's going to be a blow for them, too. Two rookie of the year candidates ultimately falling out. So, as you can tell, I'm a little muted today, and that is why. We looked pretty good.
Yeah, when I asked you how was the weekend, I kind of forgot about that layer of it when I asked that question.
It was very sad.
Also, I'm very upset with the New England Patriots because
the first half?
Dude, you win the game 32-13. You put on a clinic in the second half. Where was that in the first half?
Just a little slow starting.
Laid the 3.5 like a bum. By the way, as we talk about all these injuries, we do want to thank Spot Odds for the injury update. For professional sports bettors like Billy Walters, world-class bookmakers like the ones right here where we're broadcasting from at Circa Sports, everyone who bets big or books big uses Spot Odds. You should be using the tools the pros use, spotodds.com. Use the code VSIN as well for a special discount. We'll have more NFL on the way in short order, but we're going to step aside here real quickly. When we come back, our first look at Game 3 of the World Series that rolls on tonight. Series tied at 1. Is the money moving in the right direction with the Los Angeles Dodgers at home tonight and Tyler Glasnow on the hill? We'll get into it all coming up next right here on Money Moves.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Game 3 of the World Series is on deck coming up tonight. Series tied at 1 as we welcome you back here to Money Moves. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Remember, if you want to join in on any of the conversation today, tweet at us, at MeJBT, at Storm Bonantoni, at VSiN Live. Would love to hear some of your thoughts on what we're talking about each and every day. But as far as this goes with the Blue Jays and Dodgers, the Jays wore down the Dodgers pitchers in Game 1. On the bullpen pitchers, I was going to get there. There's a lot of alliteration happening, that big sixth inning. And then the Dodgers got a shutdown starting pitching performance from Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who had another complete game and just looked dominant. Now we have 3 games in 3 days in Los Angeles, starting tonight with Tyler Glasnow on the hill, Max Scherzer going on the other side. The updated series prices for you. Dodgers out to -225 favorites, Blue Jays +185, so not too different from where this thing opened, now with the series tied at 1. And tonight, the Dodgers are getting bet at home for their first game back in L.A.
Yeah, I don't blame the market for heading in this direction. So we can start with the Scherzer aspect of things. Scherzer last time out pitched well, gave him 5 2/3. You give him a chance against the Seattle Mariners, they're going to ask. It's all you can ask, considering what the overall profile looked like for Scherzer. But if you dive into some of the actual numbers for him in that start, a lot of hard contact allowed. I think according to StatCast, it was 5 that were over 100 miles an hour in terms of exit velocity. I think he was getting tagged. It was just that those balls were going to the right places, and Mariners on batting average on balls in play did not hit very well against him. I still think that mixed up in that really gritty performance, if you want to use the cliche, of a guy who refused to come out of a game, is a dude who was kind of getting away with stuff, as you do every once in a while as a pitcher. And so now you get this 5.19 ERA for the regular season, 4.99 fielding independent. On the road this year, he had an ERA well over 5. Fielding independent was floating around 5 as well, just below it. I think as a righty going up against this lineup that can do some damage with Otani, with Freeman, with Muncy, I think that this is one where we start to see him at least look like the guy that caused a lot of social media folks to tweet out, well, looks like the series is over for the Blue Jays when they were going up against the Mariners and throwing him out there on the mound. And I think they can get to him relatively early. I mean, there's not a ton of belief. You see some of the market props out there, Storm. I mean, 11.5 for the total outs. Yeah. You know, strikeouts relatively low and shaded to the under because the expectation is probably not going to be out there very long. His earned run props, which we'll talk about a little bit later, 2.5. Over is like plus 115, plus 113. But I don't know if you're getting a ton from Scherzer because I do think the Dodgers can get to him today.
Yeah, you're asking a lot for the 41-year-old to really turn back the clock and do it again. Yeah, you mentioned the gritty performance, but can you then do it now on the biggest stage imaginable
on the road against
the best team in baseball, which I don't think anybody will really dispute at this point. Then when you look on the other side, let's go deep into Tyler Glasnow. How do you see him and what he can do against this Toronto lineup that has had its moments? They've been the best batting team in Major League Baseball throughout the postseason. They had that huge sixth inning that we mentioned in game one. What do they do today?
I mean, that's going to be really it. So like Glasnow has been great. I mean, you look at his last few starts, you go back to the regular season at the end of it. So he had given up 4 earned runs over the course of 5 innings in a home start against the San Francisco Giants. But since the start of September, he has had 7 outings. He has allowed more than 1 earned run just once, and that is the start that I mentioned against San Francisco. The guy's been untouchable. Now, mixed in there is like a 1 2/3 when he showed up in the Phillies game the first time around of the series, but he's been asked to now start these games, and he's been brilliant. And again, his last 2 postseason starts, he combined 11 2/3, 5 hits, 1 earned run, and 16 strikeouts. Now, this is an aggressive lineup, as we've talked about a ton. You know, this is a team that will swing. They will be aggressive. They don't strike out. They don't walk either, because as we talked about with Adam Burke, if you remember last week when we had him in, we discussed the aggressive nature of this lineup and how they approach it at the plate, and they're not really going to change it. So maybe he goes a little bit long. Think you can maybe feel like going over 15.5 outs. I know you're laying a price. What is it right now? What do we got? Like minus 162?
Yeah.
That seems relatively fair, but I would expect a somewhat long performance here from Glasnow. I think he can go out and get that done and get him into the sixth or seventh inning potentially, just given the way that the Blue Jays approach things at the plate, the way that he's been pitching.
So I know your initial thought on this series was laying the 1.5 games with the Dodgers. How do you feel about things through 2 games?
I mean, you got to feel pretty good, right? My only hope was they did what they did. Just take 1 of the 2 games in Toronto, and then like you said, now we get 3 straight in L.A., and you're in a pretty good position to be able to get that done if you're playing at home. I know baseball is a little bit of a weird sport where home field maybe not be worth that much, but still, it's just better for them in that sense. So I think you got to feel pretty good. I mean, given the market's belief, you know, I know that there's a couple of our listeners. We were going back and forth. Andy's a very good viewer, listener of our show and of our network. And, you know, he was likening this to the Pacers-Thunder series in the NBA Finals, where there wasn't really much belief in the underdog, and yet the underdog came out and fought tooth and nail, and in fact could have won game 7, of course, if Tyrese Haliburton doesn't get hurt. So maybe we get the same scenario here, and it looked like that maybe after game 1 when they pounced all over the Dodgers. But it's hard not to believe in this Dodgers team. The way that these arms are pitching and the way that this offense has been turning out runs, it's hard not to buy it. And by the way guys like Dave Roberts are handling things, Roberts done a great job in terms of managing this team.
Run total for the game, by the way, as well, sitting 8.5 right now. As far as the World Series MVP odds board goes, Shohei Ohtani remains your favorite. You're actually getting a slightly better number now at 2-1. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. plus 550. Will Smith plus 950, as is Yoshi Yamamoto. And then the odds get to double digits and beyond. Any names that kind of caught your eye in terms of the value on the board right now?
I mean, I would say, like, we have this Ohtani start looming. So, like, that's always going to be tough. Because like we talked about, right, even as we saw in the NLCS, did nothing throughout it, and then he gets the 1 start, does what he does at the plate, and all of a sudden you run away and win NLCS MVP. So maybe we should just bet Ohtani. Like if you're like me and you laid 1.5 games thinking, hoping that maybe they could end this before they have to go back to Toronto, maybe you just do it because, excuse me, he's been fine, drove in 2 in the loss to Toronto. I do wonder with voters, you know, how much do you account for statistical output in losses like that, right? Like, does Ohtani have a leg up on the rest of his fellow Dodgers because he drove in 2 in a game in which they lost 11-4? Like, I don't know, maybe. But with that start looming, it's hard not to still gravitate toward Ohtani at this point right now, right?
Okay. Let's shift gears here for the last couple minutes of the segment because I know you were flustered in the commercial break about some NBA news that just came out, and there is a full slate of games that's coming up today. We'll dive into that a little bit deeper. We'll have best bets at the end of the show like we always do. But it's we're entering week two of the season and you're already getting ticked off at some of the news as it comes out.
So the New Orleans Pelicans are not on a back-to-back. So, you know, you get these injury reports. For those who don't really know, teams don't have to submit injury reports if they're on the second leg of a back-to-back till later in the day. So for teams like Boston, and it's part of it's a guessing game. You know, I was texting our Harvard Handicappers group chat about what I was looking at this week or today. And one of the things I threw out there was like, you know, like Boston is playing their third game in 4 days. It's the second leg of a back-to-back. They've already played. This is going to be their fourth game already. And Jaylen Brown had hurt his hamstring in the final preseason game prior to this. So he's playing a lot of minutes. My assumption is that he's not going to play. So let's play this Pelicans team. Again, the injury report's clean. There's not anybody that's going to miss this game. And then sure enough, 20 minutes ago, not even. Injury, because it gets updated every hour on the hour at the 30-minute mark. So you kind of get the leak out of what that's going to look like for some of these injury reports. Sure enough, Zion Williamson, questionable to play. I'm like, it wasn't on the injury report all day long. And then now, sure enough, Boston flips to a 1.5-point favorite. But I will note, I was right. Jaylen Brown is listed as questionable, and the designation is injury management. That generally should lead to him not playing.
Okay.
So if I can finally get on the right side of some injury news, then we can get this home and get a pretty, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's a decent number. It'll probably close like 1.5, but just give me Zion out there, man.
So I know we talk a lot in football about the 1.5 to 1.5 flip ultimately not being that significant. In basketball, how different is that?
Yeah, I don't want to say it's meaningless, but especially with a game with a total of 231.5. Like, I should probably even make the case that, again, we talk about this from the standpoint of, like, content and what we always discuss. Really, what you should be doing with this game is sitting down at 5:10 p.m. Pacific time and being ready to bet, you know, well, in-game.
Get your good number in-game.
Yeah.
Is that basically, honestly, and I know on shows like this early in the day, we want to give as many angles as possible. We want to give you guys bets. No, but, like, for a sport like the NBA, is live betting the best way to do it?
Yes. That's like I've talked about that with Gil, talked about it with Kelly. We say it all the time. I mean, at one point, I'm willing to bet at one point in this game between Boston and New Orleans, you're going to be able to set yourself up, like, if you really wanted to, with some sort of middle or whatever it is. You're going to get a plus price on both teams, especially when the total's 231.5 and the spread is 1.5. You're going to get these runs of variance, as you see over the course of a basketball game, and I'll probably be able to get something better on the New Orleans Pelicans.
So how do you, I guess, big picture approach that? Do you have a mindset of what you think is going to happen? You have a target number, and you're like, if I get this, then I'm going to fire?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's generally how you should do it. I mean, unless you do, like, really like a side pre-flop, or if you're maybe going to get ahead of, you know, I felt like a smart guy for 2 hours because I'm like, dude, Jaylen Brown's totally not going to play this game. So if I was right, and, like, I lay 1.5 in New Orleans, and then pre-flop they close, like, 4.5 or something like that, and then all of a sudden I can find myself in a position to, like, you know, look for something on Boston if the Pelicans go up big or whatever it is. So, you know, you work off your pre-flop position or whatever it is and look for positions to do it. Absolutely.
Okay. I know sometimes just throughout the course of a game, you're like, how is that number that? And we do that a lot on the NFL Sundays as we're live betting the show. So that's a little bit of a different perspective. But for basketball in particular, it's a game of runs. There's ebbs and flows, and there's so many different options.
Well, and as Kelly wrote in the guide, you know, getting to understand in spots like positive residual, if you go to the website, they have good heat maps of when guys check in and out of games. So understanding when dudes' rotations are and when they're going to come into a game and when stars are going to come back in is pretty good to set up your live betting as well.
Okay. We told you earlier the Sports Equinox is here, and today is actually the Sports Equinox day officially, with all four major professional sports leagues all in action at once. And to celebrate, we've got a Sports Equinox special here at VSiN. For just $129, you get access to everything we have here at the network: daily best bets, betting splits, the AI-driven prop projections, live and on-demand content, everything until May 1st, 2026. VSiN.com/subscribe.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Official racing partner of VSiN, and they're thrilled to bring an exclusive offer to bet the Breeders' Cup World Championships coming up. Use our promo code VSINBC, that's VSINBC, and you'll be entered to win a VIP Vegas experience when you deposit and bet $200. Plus, when you deposit and bet just $100, you'll get a 1-year VSiN Pro subscription for access to all of our exclusive content, picks, and so much more. Bet the Breeders' Cup with First Bet, the official racing partner of VSiN. Again, that promo code VSINBC at first.com/VSiN. That's the number one, st.com/VSiN. Sorry, Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. And we mentioned it a couple times, but it has been week after week after week, all favorites lately coming home.
Yes. So I thought this was worth bringing up because as we mentioned on Sunday, I'm not one that's like, I am not, and this is not a shot at our colleague Dave Tooley, but I am not a Dave Tooley that exclusively will just play underdogs, right? I like to, you know, find value where value is if I perceive it to be. But these last couple of weeks, of course, I have been, for whatever reason, playing some a higher volume of dogs. And, of course, it is the two-week stretch that has been a massive stretch of favorites that have come in. So I think you can break it down in, like, a couple of different ways. For overall, though, the last 3 weeks, 31-9 straight up, 25-15 against the spread, favorites have been. The last 2 weeks, it's been a little bit more extreme. 20-5 has been absolutely ridiculous in what you've seen. And what is it, 18-7 yeah. ATS. So it has been an incredible run for these favorites over the last couple of weeks. Now, does it mean anything? I think it means something. I think it means something in that, you know, we do our ratings on Fridays, and I think we're starting to see at this early, I think it's pretty early too, but we're starting to see that the good teams are pretty good and the bad teams are pretty bad. I mean, the most extreme example, are the Titans going to cover a game again, ever? Like, what's going on with this? They're failing to cover by over 5 points a game. They're getting blown out almost every single opponent that they face. They were on the verge of getting blown out potentially by Arizona before DeMarcado drops the ball in the end zone and then everything goes to absolute bleep after that. So it seems like these bad teams are pretty bad. And when there's a favorite out there, they can go out there and smoke these teams.
Yeah, the Titans in particular, it's a tough watch. And like every time you get this big number, you think there could be opportunity to buy in. It's just not worth it. And it's been a historically bad stretch now, dating back to last season, whether it's been Brian Callahan or now McCoy. It's just a rough road for the Tennessee Titans, and it's not going to get much easier with the Chargers upcoming this week. Even the Texans looking formidable with that defense, the Seattle Seahawks, and just the list goes on and on. So potential more and more opportunities to fade the Tennessee Titans team down the line. Also, give the Colts credit because they have been unbelievable this season, and another great day for Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah. MVP?
Can he?
So that's the question that's wanted to ask you. I mean, I was talking about this yesterday up at a stadium swim with a couple of people. And I know, like, I think Mitch and Doug have some sort of ticket. Doug Kazarian, Mitch Moss, our colleague here and friend of the show, dare I say, Doug Kazarian. And he's 20-1 now. And I was talking about this actually with our friend as well, Kendall Valenzuela, who's going to be with us later in the week. I was on her show this morning. And we were discussing the potential of this. He's on pace to potentially match LaDainian Tomlinson's single-season record of rushing touchdowns.
Which is 31 in his MVP season.
Yes. So if he has like 20, which he's on pace for about 2,200 yards and 29-ish touchdowns, and total yards again, so from scrimmage. If he hits those marks and this team wins the one seed in the AFC, what are we thinking? I feel like I want to bet it.
It's just such a quarterback award these days.
But who's the quarterback that you think would blow him out of the water right now? Outside of Mahomes, because Mahomes playing well, and you know that's we'll see what the record looks like, all that kind of stuff. But outside of Patrick Mahomes, who is the quarterback that you could unequivocally point to with their resume and say Jonathan Taylor's not going to have a shot against that guy?
Sure, because I mean, and look at the top of the odds board for MVP right now is. It's Josh Allen, who do the Bills really look like the Bills? Granted, he has to be Superman more often than not in order for them to have success, although shout out James Cook this past week. Drake May, Baker Mayfield, Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff, Daniel Jones, and then Jonathan
Taylor.
Daniel
Jones ain't winning it. Like, Daniel Jones, he's again.
You don't think there's any potential for a split with that?
Daniel Jones is in he is given the keys to the Ferrari, and it's downhill, and he just has to let off the brake. Like, the amount of work that is on Daniel Jones' shoulders is minuscule. Like, this is all about what Jonathan Taylor has done.
And you still stand on the belief that voters will not reward Daniel Jones with Comeback Player of the Year?
No, I'm absolutely sure.
I
will say this.
I had to double back on it.
As Justin Sweetelson said, I mean, he made a reference that I don't think I'll make. But I'll just say that he would probably cause anarchy, we'll say. I'll be with him. If Daniel Jones wins Comeback Player of the Year, I will go to the AP offices myself and pick it.
Okay. Here's my thing, though, just to go back to it again. And I understand the unequivocal argument to it. But with Jonathan Taylor being -225 for Offensive Player of the Year, it has become the de facto non-quarterback award. MVP is the quarterback award.
Why not both?
It's like, why not both? Listen, I don't hate it. You're getting 22-1. However, I'm just not sure that can happen.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you think his odds of winning MVP are greater than what 22-1 would indicate?
Yes.
Okay, you're in.
I think that's fair to say.
Okay, you're in.
He does have 4 games this season already with 3 or more touchdowns.
I'm telling you.
Like, that's wild.
And, I mean, to point out, like, and it goes back to, I think a lot of people have questions about the legitimacy of Indianapolis. In a couple of weeks, they'll play. I mean, this week, it's an interesting test. You're on the road as a 3-point favorite against the Steelers. What is it, 3 weeks from now? They will be playing the Kansas City Chiefs coming after their bye. You see it right there. So like in a month. If they roll through the Steelers and then the game in Germany, blemish-free, I mean, we're talking about 9-1 coming out of a bye on the road against Kansas City. That's going to be – could that be a de facto tiebreaker?
I want to see where they're at in the – what the odds are for them in the AFC right now.
Because you know what's going to be interesting, excuse me, is that Jonathan Taylor, if we're right, because we talked about Monday Night Football tonight, and the fact that all of the metrics point to Kansas City not being a very good defense against the run, if that continues to hold over the course of the next month, mm-hmm. and they go out to Kansas City and he romps over the Chiefs, has a big game, yeah. they win the game outright, they're 10-1 and look like they're on their way to the top seed in the AFC. That's a pretty good feather in the cap for Mahomes, who, I mean, God forbid, let's say Mahomes loses they lose the Bills game, let's say they lose the Colts game, even if they go on to win the division, will Mahomes and whatever he does offensively be able to win the award over Jonathan Taylor, who, let's say he achieves the goals of matching LaDainian Tomlinson and whatnot, and he's a starting back for the number one seed in the AFC? You're getting there. You're getting there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. And it's
I convinced you about the Buccaneers.
It's apples and oranges, but I also think about like the last couple years with offensive rookie of the year, how historic the season was for Brock Bowers, how historic the season was for Puka Nacua, mm-hmm. and the award still went to quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So like it, you know, they're just it's just a thought. If the quarterback sure. has some sort of an edge because they are the manager of the offense and they touch the ball every single snap, like that's just how it leans. That said, in terms of the shaping of the AFC right now, the Chiefs are +260 favorites. The Bills still getting a lot of love in the market at +380. The Colts are sitting there as your third shot on the board at 4-1.
Can I point something out real quick?
Sure.
Paulie checks in at Paulie1968. Stafford on pace, 4,500 yards, 40 touchdowns. If they win the Division 1 or 2 seed, he would have a good shape resume for MVP. And I think that makes some sense as well. I mean, this is for sure, I think what's going to be interesting about MVP – I don't think it's this two-horse race right now. I think these two guys are in the lead.
Yeah.
But there's definitely still room on the track for somebody to come up from behind.
Well, and Keith Irizarry actually pointed out last week, Matthew Stafford was a name that was top of mind for him. I know we've talked a lot about Baker Mayfield and with the weapons that he's lost, if he were able to get this team to continue to ascend, although that's taken a bit of a hit.
Has it? Because I saw a big dub yesterday.
They did. Jordan Love had a big dub yesterday, too. Do you
he's
think?
Out.
I mean, we're only in week 9.
I know, I'm just kidding.
There's so much of the season to go, and I think that was his best performance.
Sure.
So, I don't know. Are there any other names farther down the board that you could still have in consideration? Justin Herbert, 28-1.
I feel like you're probably drawing a line around there. I mean, it would take like a pretty crazy run, I think, for like a Herbert to push past all of these guys. Now, like two things happen at once, right? The Colts can fall from grace. The Chiefs maybe are just a 500 team, and then Herbert goes sprinting through the AFC West. So yeah. I'm not going to say anything's impossible. And I think Herbert is a guy that NFL media would love to give the MVP award to. I mean, you talk about these weird conversations we have narratively around some of these guys. I've never seen a dude be so elusive when it comes to postseason success and yet be lauded as one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. And I think part of that is there is a contingent of media who would love to give it to him. So I'm not going to say no at all. It's similar to like the media in the NBA. They are salivating and just waiting for Victor Wembanyama to play 65 games so they can give him Defensive Player of the Year. Like that bet is all you're laying a price on is whether or not he'll play 65 games because they want to give him that award. They would love to give it to Herbert. It's just a grander scale that he has to achieve.
Are you leaning more toward Wemby MVP?
We can talk about that. We'll talk about that of Call Me Crazy.
That is great. That is a great tease for what we have coming up next here on Money Moves. Call Me Crazy, but continuing to either overreact or react properly to what has been a wild weekend in sports with some of our stronger opinions coming up, including, by the way, one with regards to the firing we had this past weekend in college football. Brian Kelly out at LSU. What that means not only for the Tigers moving forward, but kind of the state of college football and where we're at right now. We're going to step aside. So much more to come here on Money Moves. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on Money Moves, did you know football meets flavor with VSiN and Omaha Steaks? Omaha Steaks, the official sponsor of tailgating. And right now, when you go to omahasteaks.com/VSiN, get this. You can get 16 free smash burgers with any order of $129 or more. Omaha Steaks smash burgers are pre-smashed, crafted from premium aged beef. Go from freezer to bun in just 5 minutes with unforgettable flavor. Also, by the way, 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com/VSIN when you do so. That's omahasteaks.com/VSIN. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Put on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy.
For Call Me Crazy, But.
He says, call Burgers. Me crazy, yeah. But as we welcome you back here to the program, continue to overreact to what was a busy weekend in sports. And I'm going to start in college football because, JVT, the big news, Brian Kelly officially out as head coach of LSU, his fourth year into a 10-year contract. The firing comes on the heels of a 49-25 dismantling from Texas A&M. They've lost back-to-back games three of the last four, and LSU's 13 losses as an AP-ranked team since 2022 is the most by any program in that time. So this call me crazy is not to do with that the firing wasn't warranted, given expectations, all of that stuff, but LSU could have to pay Brian Kelly up to $54 million in a buyout. And I know they're still working those things out, but just to no longer coach their team, $54 million. And this has been happening for years, I know, but after seeing James Franklin fired 2 weeks ago with a $49 million buyout, even Billy Napier, who they did give the extra year to, $21 million. Call me crazy, but money is no object, nor is it a deterrent anymore in college football. The pockets of these donors and at high-level programs are deep as can be, and in a win-now, instant gratification world, this is going to be the norm, not the exception to the rule anymore.
Hard to call you crazy. I mean, you talk about donors. Look how much money these programs are getting just from all these TV deals, everything that's happening. I mean, it's FU money. You can just roll in there, and you know, it's a great – I can't remember who I was talking to, but it's a great point in that. Look, I don't think they're signing these guys to these contracts, not understanding that they can't afford these buyouts. So they understand, like, even if we want to get rid of them at point X, Y, or Z, we know we can afford that.
Well, because we had a call me crazy a couple weeks ago when all the James Franklin stuff came down. We were like, call me crazy, but maybe don't, like, sign these coaches to 10-year contracts with these massive buyouts. It's unnecessary. But if they don't mind continuing to shell out all this money because they've got it, fine. Keep doing your stupid thing.
And we were talking, like, I think one of the interesting points in the ramifications coming from this is, so let's say the report that we saw over the weekend that Sark wants to be out. Let's maybe, for the sake of this exercise, let's see he leaves for the NFL, right? Lane Kiffin is the big name that Florida really wants. Let's say all these other programs want him too. Who are the other big names that you're really going to go and grab? And my whole point here being is that maybe you now don't have to overpay, and you're going to get some of these guys that are kind of on the rise. You're still going to pay them quite a bit of money, but you won't have to do as much because you're not paying for, you know, past experience, whatever it is. And you're buying a little bit more on the cheap for up-and-coming coaches as opposed to retreads and big names.
Everybody at LSU keeps saying, bring Saban back. He's not coming back.
No.
He's not coming back.
For 2 years? Like three? Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Okay, where are you going first?
All right, so call me crazy, but the betting scandal in the NBA, I think, is going to change injury reports forever. So okay. I actually brought this up to you, if you remember, when we were sitting out here yesterday. And it's funny because we got news about this, but there has to be something with the way the NBA reports on its injuries. Today, it's funny that it happens. It's a great example. The Pelicans submit an injury report. They submit it early because they don't have a back-to-back. Zion Williamson's not on it, and then all of a sudden he pops up at 11 o'clock Pacific time, and the line flips back in the other direction. The report today from Shams Charania is that the league is starting to now reevaluate its reporting process on these things. This is part of a large statement that was released to its teams, but it says, quote, we have also begun a process of reviewing league policies regarding injury reporting, the training and education of all NBA personnel, and safety measures for NBA players. With sports betting now occupying such a significant part of the current sports landscape, every effort must be made to ensure that players, coaches, and other NBA personnel are fully aware of the dire risks that gambling can impose upon their careers and livelihoods.
Yeah.
Relax. That our injury disclosure rules are appropriate and that players are protected from harassment from bettors. And look, those are all important statements. But the second part of that final sentence is the most important for us, part of this discussion. The way you report injuries, and I'll be very curious to see. My suggestion is I think you should have shoot-around reports. So much like in the NFL, where after every practice you get a status report for players if they're on your injury report. You know, did not participate, limited participant, and full participant. I wouldn't give NBA teams a gray area personally, because like you mentioned when we were talking about it, they can put limited for everybody and then you can still do whatever you want. I think it should be binary. I think it should be did not participate or did participate in a shoot-around, to give you a sense of whether a guy is going to play or not. But there has to be more accuracy here, because it just eliminates the noise. You don't get accused of doing these things either. There's going to be some sort of change, I think, with these injury reports, and I hope it comes soon.
I love that idea. And it actually, I think, dovetails pretty nicely into what my next one is here, that we did not have this planned, by the way. That I said, call me crazy, but accurate injury reports aren't that hard. And there are two parts of this, because over the weekend in the NFL, obviously everything that transpired with Lamar Jackson in the Ravens, where he's listed as a full participant when in reality he was running the scout team, so he actually should have been a limited participant, which again, money is changing hands and people are like, oh, Lamar Jackson's full go, he's ready to go, ultimately ends up getting ruled out on the report. The Ravens have to come out and make a statement, all this stuff. Ravens end up winning the game, covering any number. It ends up being fine, but that's not the point. Then also for myself in college football this weekend,
this is incredible.
The game that I am working with Colorado and Utah, Utah throughout the course of the week, we were wondering what the status is going to be of their starting quarterback, Devin Dampier. On Thursday, he is upgraded from questionable on the injury report to probable. Come Saturday on the official injury report that comes out 90 minutes before kickoff, where you have to submit everything, Dampier is no longer on the injury report. So what, JVT, does that lead you to believe?
Oh, he's going to play.
Devin Dampier is going to play. No. Very disingenuous in the sense that Dampier is available as an emergency backup, but the true freshman, Bird Ficklin, is going to start this game because Devin Dampier didn't get far enough to be able to go and start this game. That is problematic. Can you tell I was fired up with this one and not getting the information until right before kickoff?
I mean, I think you're being nice. I don't have any skin in the game because you might have to see him again. I think it's outright manipulative. And like all of these things that we're talking about with injury reports and the inaccuracies and maybe the manipulation of said injury reports, whether it's for inside information or whatever it is, what Whittingham has done multiple times this year with this and the Texas Tech game now, that should be an offense that should have some sort of punishment to it if you're actually taking the sanctity of these availability reports that you as a conference have installed. You should take this more seriously, and there should be some sort of repercussion. He's outright lying and manipulating these reports, and that's ridiculous.
And what JVT is referencing, for anyone who didn't know, against Texas Tech, Devin Dampier was not on the injury report at all that week.
Yep.
And then after the loss to Texas Tech, it was revealed that he actually didn't practice because he had been dealing with an ankle injury. That is the ankle that he re-aggravated at BYU last week, and that hampered him this week.
You got me gun-shy, man. I've listened to everything you said, and I swear you didn't say that, but I did not give details on the Texas Tech thing, just in case you did say it. I don't want to repeat what you said again. Can't do it. I had an issue on Sunday where I was not listening to Stormy properly. All right.
Listen, we got a lot going on. We got 8 screens in front of us watching games. It happens.
There's a lot. I got a lot on my plate. Call me crazy, but let's stick with the NBA. I think I'm going to drink the Kool-Aid here. Spurs are going to be a playoff team. I'm so in.
You're doing it.
Holy smokes, dude. Through 3 games, this team is so impressive. We have to start with the obvious. Victor Wembanyama, through 3 games, how about these averages? 33.3 points, 13.3 rebounds, 2.3 assists, and a paltry 6 blocks per game with 1.7 steals on 56% shooting. The big thing here for him, last year, and this was one of like the big bugaboos about his game, if you will, last year, he averaged only 4.1 free throws per game, free throw attempts. He's up to 10 per game this year. He is getting more physical. He's getting to the line. He's obviously doing his block shots. I sent you guys this morning. I was rewatching the game this morning. A ridiculous sequence where he blocks 2 shots defensively and then comes down and pulls up from the logo and hits a 3. It's nuts. And even more than that, like Stephon Castle's a good player. He's a good perimeter defender. He's got the ball in his hands more. They've got a stud rookie. I think Dylan Harper, he looks great. I don't know, man. I don't think they're going to be like a 1 seed or anything, but I think the upward trajectory for this team this year might actually be like the 6th seed in the Western Conference.
I just love that, because you talk about like the blocks per game. He's doing multiple multiple blocks on single possessions.
Yep.
It's just the dude's a freak of nature. Now with that in mind, the MVP board, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is still your favorite to repeat at 2-1. Wemby's plus 275.
Okay, you can't get me there. You can't
plus
get me there.
Plus 275.
Do we have updated? I'll tell you what I feel good about. Do we have updated odds on all NBA first team? Because this dude right now is, if the season, I love when people do this. If the season ended today, he'd be a lock to be a yep, to be first team all NBA. No. They're pretty solid, man. Number two in net rating, by the way. Pop quiz, behind what team?
I don't know.
The Utah Jazz.
I'm not there yet. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's only two games.
So you have the under the lowest win total.
They're 1-1. They just their last game. I can't even remember.
I would never have gotten that.
Oh, it was a Clippers game. They smoked the Clippers.
Even if I just like pulled a team out of thin air, it would not have been the Utah Jazz. Wemby also minus 250 odds on favorite to be your defensive player of the year. We're gonna step aside here on Money Moves when we come back. Resetting for hour two of the program. Monday Night Football on deck between the Commanders and Chiefs. Our deep dive into the prop market after this.